Foz talked me out of making it a revenue ticket, so
I think it's the right decision.
Yeah, it's fine.
It also makes it easier to cancel.
It's very true.
Oh, come on now. Play fair.
I'm considering it.
You're listening to Dots, Lines, and Destinations, a travel podcast with hosts Stephen Seagraves, Foz Mamoon, and Seth Miller.
Hello, and welcome to episode 546 of Dots, Lines, and Destinations. I'm Stephen Seagraves, joined today by Mr. Foz Mamoon and Seth Miller. Gentlemen, how are you?
Good morning.
How you doing?
I'm doing all. I got my coffee. I'm happy.
Mm-hmm. I don't have any coffee, so I'm happy.
Do you drink tea in the morning?
No.
How do you get started for the day?
Usually I have a banana.
So you're running like on a sugar spike.
Or just that I wake up and get going, yeah.
Yeah, okay. We should probably apologize to our listeners for last week's audio quality. So we're trying out some new tools to record the show. And the tool we used last week definitely didn't cut it. So
terrible.
Yeah, so we're really sorry about that.
The only thing I will be happy about for that is that one of the chunks of audio it deleted was a conversation I had with Foz where I got a bunch of stuff wrong. So,
also it was very convenient for you.
Yes.
So wait, maybe the AI function did work then.
Hey-o!
It's learning. Let's talk about the one-stop immigration, I guess we can call it.
Security, yeah.
So we talked about it last show. It's coming. It's starting in DFW, but we've learned now Delta is going to do something very similar at Atlanta. And so what's the details with that, Seth?
Yeah. Very, very similar setup. This is actually the part that I got wrong. Foz and I were talking about passenger flow at one point last week and his audio got lost. But basically one of the interesting things that has come out is from some real world experience people talking about it is, coming off the aircraft, there is, as we discussed last week, sort of a mini arrivals immigration area in the terminal, sort of off the jet bridge. There's for passengers who are terminating at DFW, and let's assume Atlanta as well, the experience is at that point you actually veer off and go to regular customs and immigration, and your bags are sent to that baggage claim area, so your bags are separated.
Okay.
Also, the report, this was a report on Flyer Talk, said that there were signs in the jet bridge, people holding signs and with names on them. If your name was on one of those signs, you were escorted to the regular immigration area as well. So higher risk or needed something special handling was brought back downstairs to the regular immigration space.
Hmm.
And so that was an interesting twist to me. Obviously, you know, for the baggage stuff, it means essentially a separate container configured at Heathrow for folks going only to DFW, which on the one hand confusing, on the other hand you'd think they probably were doing that anyways just because of, you know, tracking connection traffic and this and that. They do sort bags before they put them in containers usually, so it's an interesting sort of extra set of details. But I don't know, I still think you know, the other half of that, because they are separating some of the theoretical high risk people out, basically everybody in the regular line gets what would seem to be a, if not global entry, almost global entry type experience. Very quick process.
So I just want to clarify one thing. So if you're coming in and you're not terminating at DFW or Atlanta, you'll go down a separate area and go straight to normal immigration and baggage claim. Is that correct?
If you are terminating, you go to baggage claim, or so regular immigration. If you are not terminating, if you are connecting, you get the special straight back into the terminal treatment.
Okay, that's what I said.
Unless you've been flagged.
Unless you've been flagged. I mean, I get it. It sounds good. It'll make the lines in the connecting area shorter because there's fewer people connecting potentially at these places than there are, you know, O&Ding.
Other way around.
You think there's gonna be more people connecting?
Yes.
I think it adds a complexity that's unnecessary because now I've got to go to regular immigration. My bags have got to be sorted to go to regular immigration.
As a terminating passenger or as a connecting passenger?
As a terminating passenger.
Okay. You go to regular immigration and there'll be fewer people there because...
No, that's fine. I'm not disagreeing with you. I just think it's like, it's adding a level of complexity to something that the airlines already struggled to get right, which is connecting bags with people.
I think a bigger challenge would be not for people terminating, but people connecting who get flagged.
That's fair too. Like, how do they know the bags are flagged? Yeah.
Yeah, because the terminating bags are easy because the tag says DFW is the final destination. Mm. But it's the bags that are flagged versus not flagged, right? Because they're all connecting. Some people have to go to the regular immigration. Some people get expedited and their bags just get forwarded. So how's that going to work?
Yeah. So those bag sort systems are pretty effective at identifying specific tag numbers, right? So as you go through, as the bags run around the belt system and whatever and get sorted automatically, it's scanning, it sees the bag tag, the routing number on it, figures out where it's supposed to go and what belt to shift it to. They can easily say passenger X, and they could flag it at check-in, or it could be flagged later. But, let's assume it gets flagged later, like that passenger is flagged while they're in flight already. Their bag gets flagged as needing to sort out. If those bags are all in the regular arrivals queue, I guess either it gets automated pulled or manual pulled, and we don't know. But if it's automated, I think it's actually easier.
Yeah, but I would counter this, right? Conceptually, yes, that's all very true.
Yeah.
I think we all know that conceptual and reality and baggage sorting is not the same. If it was, we wouldn't be losing so many bags that disappear for weeks and months.
Yep, I'm with Foz. Yeah. I think the other part of this that I don't know how it's going to work is separate tickets. So I'm on a separate ticket to DFW on Qantas, and then I'm connecting on another ticket on American because I couldn't get it to book.
I think it would depend on how the bag gets tagged.
Well, how the bag gets tagged, but what do I do as a passenger? Like, do they know that I'm connecting even though I'm on a separate ticket? Do they care?
I would assume if you're on separate tickets, they won't tag the bag through and you have to claim and recheck.
Yeah. And then what about me as a passenger? I'm probably going to have to go through regular immigration.
Yeah. Yeah. But I guess the question is, A, separate tickets is very much an edge case, but B, would the passenger booked on separate tickets understand and know that even though they think they're going on, they're connecting, that they're not really?
Yeah, I'm with you.
Yeah. Screw those guys. I mean, I am one of them all the time, but.
Yeah, it's an interesting, I think this concept is cool, and I hope we see more destinations and things come from this. Like, if this happened at PDX, it's great. Makes PDX much more of a usable hub. But if it didn't, like, PDX is a pain in the ass. Foz has done it. It's a pain.
I haven't done an arrival.
You haven't done an arrival? Okay. Yeah, well,
only departure.
Oh, man, well, it's a pain.
I've seen the bus.
Yeah. I'm trying to think of other places. Like, this could be useful at LAX. Like, you could, theoretically, United could do this if they had space in their terminal.
Houston is a natural one for me.
Yeah, Houston's a good one. Makes a lot of sense.
And maybe Denver.
Denver? Yeah, because they wouldn't have to tow planes from A. Would be nice.
Well, yeah, they would, because no matter what, you still have to park at a gate access to the immigration space.
Yeah. Yeah. But couldn't they do that, like, if they like carved out an area of C, let's say? Couldn't they do that at a gate area?
How would those passengers who are terminating or flagged get to immigration in A?
Yeah, true. I mean, they could use a special broken bus or the train. They could have a car on the train just for them.
They could do what BA used to, not BA, they used to do at Heathrow, right? BMI did this, where if you were connecting, you stayed on the plane. If you were terminating, you got off. And then you wait for everyone who's terminating gets off, then you swap the path of exit.
Oh.
But even, yeah, you still need to be physically at a gate that has access.
Unless they bus you, right?
They take the JetBridge off and put air stairs and a bus down at the bottom.
Yeah, that's definitely not more complex.
Or a moon, or put a moon rover on the back of the plane. So if you're, not terminating, you go to the back of the plane after everyone who's exiting goes forward.
Oh, yeah.
I don't understand why you guys are trying to make this more complicated.
We're throwing shit out there. Moon rovers at Denver. I'd go for that. That'd be cool.
I'd like to see someone drive it from Dallas to Denver, though.
I would sign up to drive it from Dallas to Denver. Wait a minute. This is like driving like the Wienermobile.
Are you kidding me? You'd have to stop for gas like every hour.
Well, yeah. I mean, hang on a second. Let's use our aviation skills and knowledge here. Whole bunch of jerry cans in the back instead of passengers and a lot of hoses.
Wow.
See, it seems like a lot of work.
Listen, guys, we've gone off the rails completely this morning on stupid things. So I think that a ferry config for a moon rover from Dallas to Denver is the least stupid thing we've discussed so far.
For sure.
Maybe not least, but it's bottom half.
Only 13 minutes in and we're off the rails.
I mean, that's a long time for us.
We waited a while. Anyways, what's next on the list?
So the new British Airways A380 configs and retrofits are starting, right? Like that's going to come in this, they said the second half of 2025. So we're right up against the second half of 2025. This is the new first class, and I think it's the old business class. Is that correct? Like it's the, I shouldn't say old, but it's the standard business class that you see on.
That's what they have today, but they're getting the new suites.
Oh, they are.
Yeah. They're supposed to get the new suites and 110 business class seats.
Do we know what that's going to look like?
I have no idea. They have not released a seat map from what I could find.
I mean, 110 biz seats would, I would think it would have to be on the upper deck.
Yes.
Yeah.
Like I can't imagine them using, and then maybe the lower decks like first and then coach, similar to how Qantas does it.
Yeah, very possible. But 110 is just seems obscene.
I'm curious. That would basically be the full deck, right?
I think so.
Right. Emirates does 76, but has first upstairs.
And Qantas does, I can't remember how many Qantas does, but they do quite a few as well. Pulling it up here. A380s. They do 70 in business on the upper deck with premium economy up there as well. And it's how many seats of premium economy? 34. No, 60 premium economy.
Okay.
341 coach.
Yeah, I forgot the BA splits Club World upstairs, downstairs on its 380s today.
Yeah, I would think that would make for a service nightmare, but
yeah. I mean, really. You have a dedicated crew to that cabin, so
yeah, it's like the mini it's like the mini cabin on any like United.
True,
but yeah, it's 197J today, Foz. So 110 is more, but I guess the question is, do they move them up all upstairs?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's impressive.
Yeah, so it's 97 today, of which yeah, that's a big chunk. So 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. 40 are downstairs? No.
Yeah, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
Yeah. So 5 times 8 is 40. 44 seats are downstairs. If they move that to upstairs, that's basically the big chunk of premium economy.
Yeah.
And then
push that back.
You push maybe push World Traveler Plus, you push premium economy to the back hat, to the very back.
Yep.
And get rid of all the economy upstairs.
Yeah.
I think the more impressive thing is like that they have the demand for that many seats.
Premium leisure is a big deal, right? Everybody buys premium.
Sure. But I'm thinking like Joburg, Dallas, Miami. These are places where they fly the 380, right? Is there really that much demand for business in those markets?
San Francisco. They do Singapore on the 380 as well, I think. I mean, some of those, I think. Yeah, 110 seats is a lot. I mean, I'm trying to think where else. They would, I mean, what else do you do though? Do you put more coach seats in? I mean, these aren't ultra long haul planes. So,
I mean, you could probably you would be the happy medium, right?
Yeah. I mean, I still think there's like contracts out there that are like over 8 hours. It's J.
I'm sure there are.
Yeah.
It's just impressive. Right.
They wouldn't do it if they didn't think they could fill them, right? So,
right. So between like first, I think is either going to be 12 or 14 seats. So you're looking at 124 or 122 premium seats. And like when you compare it to like the United High J config, that's what, 160 seats, 140 seats.
Yeah.
And that includes all the coach and PE.
Yep.
It's just at a scale that I'm having a hard time wrapping my head around. But it might make buy-ups easier.
I mean, we've had a friend tell us this, that BA is notorious for overselling premium economy and economy, for that matter, and they'll just upgrade people. So maybe it's just part of that. Like, they're like, we'll have the extra seats. If we fill them, we fill them. If we need to use them for upgrades, we'll do that.
Yeah, but generally the goal is not to give away something. Like, you would want
to sell it.
Yeah, you would want to sell it more often than you give it away. So at some point, they have to believe that at least 51% of the time they can sell all those seats.
Yeah, true. I mean, where else do they? Is there somewhere else they fly the A380 that they could see that much demand? I can't think of anywhere else.
I mean, the more interesting thing, will they become more operationally reliable because they've been a disaster operationally this year,
from an engine perspective, or
they have constant mechanical problems.
I doubt that goes away. I mean, on the flip side, if we look at Qatar uses their A380s. I mean, they don't have a lot of them. They have 8 first class seats, 48 business class seats, and 461 coach seats. Like, whole bottom deck is coach.
Right. But they move a lot of people through Doha to the east.
Yeah. I mean, it's a good point, Paz, that it'll be interesting to see what British Airways thinks they can actually sell.
At the least, it might be an opportunity to do buy-ups.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, even Lufthansa's only 78 J seats. Interesting. All right. Anything else you guys want to talk about with the A380?
I think that's good enough at this point.
Riyadh Air to London. How is this going to happen? They got a slot. How?
From British Airways, service daily, 14 movements a week, so enough for daily service. But it turns out that they're remedy slots. So when British Airways bought BMI, it agreed with, you know, as part of the regulatory approval, it had to agree to make slots available to competitors on specific routes. And it was Nice was one, Riyadh was one, Moscow was one, and there's a fourth, I think, that I don't remember. But because those were routes where BMI competed with BA at the time. And so Riyadh was sort of written in ink in that contract, is still there. And so those slots are, and BA still has to give them away every year to anyone who shows up and asks for them. So they sort of, Riyadh Air sort of gets them for free, if you will, which is nice. I'm sure got, you know, more or less the timings they want. The timings are interesting, though. It's a 7:30 a.m. arrival at Heathrow and a 9:30 a.m. departure.
What time does it get back into Riyadh?
If I did the math right, I think it's like a 3 a.m. departure from Riyadh and a 6 p.m. return, 5 p.m. return, something like that.
Okay. I mean, it's not terrible.
I don't know.
Maybe times
the 3 a.m. sucks, but yeah. I know it's how you connect people.
Yeah.
Right. If you look at the partnerships and whatnot they have, like their Delta partnership, that's how you get people into London in time to connect onward until they start flying to the United States themselves.
Yeah.
Yeah. Back in Saudi around 5:30 p.m. local time.
Are they going to, do you think they're going to be doing any kind of connections in Riyadh? Or is it?
I mean, eventually, sure.
That's their hope.
They are taking some narrow bodies, right?
They've got an order out there. Are they an intention? I don't remember if they announced it or not. One of the other things, though, is that their 787s aren't ready yet. So it's an ex Oman airplane.
What, a 787?
Yeah.
Oman Air has a plane that's an ex 70. Oh, anyway.
Riyadh Air took an, I think they did their original proving flights with a Saudi plane, but apparently they took an ex Oman airplane on as sort of operational.
Yeah. I'm just impressed that Oman Air has one that's not, I mean,
that they were able to act, that they were able to retire.
Yeah. Surprised they didn't be able to Air India for parts.
It might not be a retirement. It might just be a a loan for some extent.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It is. It's, I mean, it's still listed as maybe as an Oman airplane, but yeah.
So you think they're doing like maybe a wet lease?
Yeah. Well, it'll be a dry lease, but they've also leased two over to Qatar Airways. So, you know, good times.
Well, in kind of funny news ish, the Nook route continues to be, for United, a thorn in the side of the airline.
Operationally challenging.
Yes. Today. We're recording this on Sunday, August 3rd. The security personnel at the airport didn't show up to work because they're out hunting muskox and reindeer.
This is the first day of the season.
So it's delayed, and it's... it was noon when they posted this. This was a post on Reddit. And the flight's supposed to leave at 9 a.m. So just something to keep in mind.
It is. And it finally, almost 3 hours later, it finally did leave.
They were able to scan everybody with the one guy that didn't get to go hunting.
Yeah. His gun was broken?
I guess it's just something to keep in mind. Foz, you were trying to convince me to do this route here coming up, and I'm less and less inclined to do it.
It's not coming back, I can tell you that.
You think so?
I don't think it's going to come back.
I think so. A friend of the show, we'll call him R, and I had this conversation. He came to Portland and we had coffee and hung out for a little while. He thinks it's enough of a niche route that United keeps it. Like, it's kind of like a look at this cool place we fly to route.
I think if for no other reason than it's a 737, so who cares?
Yeah.
They can keep it another season to give it a try.
I'm with that. I agree with that. I think if it was anything
bigger, enough to throw away immediately.
Yeah.
But it'd be one thing if they were filling the flights, but they're consistently 40 to 50% full.
Hey, it's a loss leader, right?
Well, or not, but that's also depends on what you're charging for a seat. And also, like, that's the capacity of Greenland. Like, you could fill the plane every time, there wouldn't be anywhere for anyone to sleep when they got there. I'm serious. There's not that many hotel rooms in Nuuk. Like, it's Greenland does not have a massive tourism infrastructure, and you can't build more because it's permafrost. Like, we're talking about, like, the sewage lines run on the surface and dump into the ocean. This, it's not an area that's built up for massive capacity of people. And so, and they're sort of trying to do better with some of it, but, like, in the winter, people don't necessarily have running water. You go and, like, get, you fill barrels. So, it's not a massive, not everywhere. And, like, the core of some of the cities, it's okay. But it's, there's a real challenge from infrastructure and total capacity there. So 30-40% full might be because no one else will book, because when they go to book the flights, they can't have a hotel when they get there.
They can't find a hotel room yet. They're like, oh, I guess we're not going to Greenland.
Maybe. I mean, we'll see. But it's not just loads, right? It's been an operational challenge this year.
Sure.
That's why I wonder if it'll, that's why I'm skeptical it's going to come back.
I just think the 737 is like no, it's like very little cost.
Yeah, the only thing that makes it a vaguely expensive operation is that they overnight the crew.
Yeah. But even that, I think, is minimal.
Yeah. Yeah.
But could they do an out and back? Is it short enough to do an out back?
It's 5 hours, right? To Nuuk?
I think you'd have to do an augmented crew, which is vaguely doable, but I think it's challenging flight time-wise. You don't have the connection flow.
Okay.
You get back too late to get good connections at Newark onward.
I mean, they could leave Newark earlier in the morning.
You lose connections that way, then. It's
not, I mean, just ask Stephen how easy his connection is.
Which one?
To Nuuk from Portland.
Oh, I'd have to red eye it.
Right.
I'd rather.
Is there a non red eye from?
Or is a non red eye from Portland? Yeah, but that doesn't, it gets in at like 5 p.m.
So it hits the transatlantic bank at least.
Yeah, only part of the year.
Right. Don't be summer, it's only a summer transatlantic or summer transcon.
Yeah.
So, anyway.
I mean, I think they should start it out of their new hub in Quebec City and, you know, just get a little bit closer to Nuuk or something.
It's an 11:30 departure to Newark today. You could easily move it up to 9 a.m., still catch all the 6 a.m. flights into
Newark
and all the red eyes from the west.
Yeah, that's fair.
And you could get back, and you could get to Greenland and back, and probably have better weather as well because you're not going so late in the day.
That would cut off like 3 hours. You'd get in 3 hours earlier or 2 hours earlier.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think the weather thing is, that's like the most unpredictable part of all of this, is it seems like the weather changes mid-flight for arrivals. So, and maybe that's why the flights aren't as full, is they're filling them up.
With gas?
Yeah.
Maybe.
So they can, I mean.
Is there much cargo need?
Fresh salmon? I don't know.
I mean, that could keep the flight going if there's enough cargo demand.
Yeah.
Let's talk about Air France. And KLM, they were going to buy Air Europa, which is Spain's low-cost major carrier. But it sounds like that's not going to happen now.
Yeah, I mean, so Air Europa has been sort of on the market for a while. I want to say BA was initially trying to do it and couldn't get past antitrust because of also owning Iberia and Vueling. And then it was sort of back on the market and others were talking about trying to buy it. And so Air France KLM has basically now pulled out of the contract, of the negotiations, saying, you know, couldn't get it to a manner that made sense. Lufthansa, I think it was Carsten Spohr, is still in charge there, right? Was quoted as saying, we're still talking, but it's a very complex transaction and we don't know that it would ever be feasible to complete it. And then the other interesting one that I saw mentioned in the same story, though, is that Turkish is in play.
That's an interesting change.
Yeah.
What would be the, I mean, I guess the goal would be to have a foothold in Western Europe.
Yep.
But is that actually feasible? Like, I just don't know how that would work for them.
And do they make it part of Turkish? Do they keep it as a separate operation? Same as anyone else sort of integrating it into the mix, that sort of debate back and forth of how do you pull it together? But
is it one of those things where like Turkish needs to show growth though? Is that, you think that's the driver or is it?
Do you think Turkish has a problem with growth?
Well, I'm trying to figure out, like, why would you buy Air Europa? Like, it's clearly a struggling operation. And, yeah, sure, you can maybe get it for cheap and you can get some assets out of it. But, like, to operate them as a carrier when you're not a Western European carrier, it seems like a risk that's maybe not worth it.
I mean, but it could be, right now, the only traffic they're getting is packed people going west to east across Turkey.
Yeah.
This would give them more regionalized traffic.
And could get you a better feed into South America. I feel like Air Europa gives them a position into
more easily connect across to South America.
Like all of the South American destinations that they can't necessarily serve with A350s and 787s.
Yeah, right. Like, what's the one, this Bogota that they connect through Miami? Or is that Emirates?
That's Emirates. That's Emirates. They connect through...
They do Istanbul to Sao Paulo.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that one continues on to Santiago?
Buenos Aires.
Oh, Buenos Aires, okay.
But there is one that connects in the U.S. or somewhere in, like, maybe there's one in Panama. Is it Panama that connects?
I think so. That might be Lima, though. That might be to the other side.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, yeah, I could see that. Like, you'd be able to serve all of that with Air Europa and Spain if you wanted to.
Yeah, Turkish right now only serves Buenos Aires, Sao Paulo, Buenos Aires and Sao Paulo.
They don't do Panama. I thought they were serving.
Sorry, I'm looking at only a specific day. Let me scan a full week. In Santiago, they don't have Panama right now.
Huh, okay. Oh, no, there's one in the air right now.
What?
Yeah, your query is wrong, buddy. It's 4 hours into flight. Istanbul to Panama, Turkish 903.
My query is definitely wrong.
It's a A350-5900.
That's super weird because I queried from anything in South or Central America, and Central America includes Panama.
Mm-hmm. I believe you. Maybe it's like not daily. I mean, I don't know.
It's the end of a week.
Yeah.
You're even specifically specifying Panama. I don't get it.
Weird. Maybe it's going away.
I'm looking this week.
Well, they also do Mexico City, and then they fly Mexico to Cancun.
Okay. If I specify Panama as the origin, it shows up.
Hmm.
So is it a triangle route?
Must be. Because then.
What about Mexico City? Yeah. No, it's a triangle.
Panama to Istanbul. This is super bizarre.
We're bug fixing right here live on the show.
Anyway, moving on.
I think you guys bring up some good points. That serving of Latin in South America from Spain does make sense. So I could see that. Anything else you guys want to chat about on the main show before we jump over to the bonus topics for our Patreon subscribers?
It's super weird. It doesn't show its destination, but it shows us an origin. They have Caracas as well.
And Caracas. I forgot about Caracas. Yeah. Mexico to Cancun on Turkish. That's an interesting. I like that though. So,
Iranian 777s.
Oh yeah. Let's talk about that. So I came across this story. There's apparently been 4 or 5 777s smuggled into Iran from Cambodia.
And Madagascar played a role.
Yes. So it's really bizarre. The whole story is really bizarre, but like, there was Singapore had stored some 777s in Alice Springs, and then Knox Scoot had stored some as well. And then those made their way to Cambodia. I guess Singapore sold them to Knox, and then they started flying with Madagascarian registrations, and like 5 of them in a row. And they got over Afghanistan, turned the transponders off, and flew into Iran, and they're gone.
Yeah.
So. That's one way to do it.
Well, it's, to be fair, that is how Iran has always, but for the past several decades, has acquired aircraft. The hard part is finding a place to get the temporary registrations and essentially run the scam, and finding a regulatory authority willing to issue the paperwork that says, oh, yes, you're a real airline or, you know, MRO service operator, etc. We will license you and your pilots, who are definitely not Iranians from Mahan Air, which is where the planes always seem to end up. We will license you to operate these aircraft. And it's usually like a ferry flight for maintenance purposes, and that gets somewhere vaguely near Iran, and in this case, you know, at least to Afghanistan. And then they suffer mechanical issue or whatever, and like declare an emergency and land in Iran, and then the plane and or their parts disappear into the local flow.
Yep.
So.
It's wild. That's cool. I mean, it's a wild story.
Sneaky.
Very sneaky.
You sort of do have to wonder how, like, I don't know, I guess, how more, countries keep allowing random fly-by-night, quite literally, operators to set up shop, but also not really.
I mean, this is, again, one of those things of, like, corruption. You think Madagascar I'm sure they got a payoff.
Well, so here's what part of the fun is that the Secretary of Transportation has been fired, or Transport Minister, whatever, has been fired by the President, and they're, so he probably wasn't supposed to have done that.
Yeah. 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 Interesting. Anything else? Thanks for catching that, Foz.
Yeah. Nothing for me.
All right. Well, thank you for listening to the show. We got some bonus topics coming up. We're going to talk about late night transatlantic summer traffic that Seth found. We're going to talk about some United hubbing and some questions that have been raised. Alaska Airlines going after Avelo in Burbank. And then Seth's rebooking adventures and my adventures on Condor next week. So we're going to talk a little bit about that if you're a Patreon subscriber. If not, thanks for listening. We appreciate it. Leave a comment. Send us a blue sky note. We'd like to hear from you. And we'll talk to you next time. Happy travels.
Take care.
See you later.